We're holding the top of Nun Hei Amud Aleph. And we learned yesterday, we started talking about Eretz Ha'amim, the fact that the lands of the Goyim outside Eretz Yisrael are Tomei D'Rabbanan. And we discussed what is the idea behind that. Is it that the very air over there is Tomei? And in that case, it has less to do with the halachas of Tumah V'Tahara and more just the fact that Chachamim wanted to discourage people from leaving Eretz Yisrael. Or is it that the actual dirt there is Tomei if a person walks on it or touches it or even it overshadows it because there may be bodies buried in it, whether the bodies of the people from the Mabul, whether Goyim who bury indiscriminately, whether Jews who were killed indiscriminately in these places. So we're discussing that question. What is it, Mishum Avira because of the air or Mishum Gusha because of the actual clods of dirt? So now the Gemara says, top of Nun Hei Amud Aleph, Lema Katanoi. Should we say that this is actually the subject of Machlokes Tanoi? A Braisa says, Hanichnas La'Eretz Ha'amim B'Shida Teva U'Migdol. If a person goes into Eretz Ha'amim in a Shida Teva U'Migdol, which are various kinds of large boxes, various kinds of large wooden boxes. Now, the point is, in other words, it's not just, now you have to consider the box, of course, you could figure the box is preventing tumah from coming to them. You have to figure though, wouldn't the box itself become tumah? And the answer is that you have in halacha when you have wooden boxes or boxes made out of most other material, of many other materials that are more than a certain size. It's called bob midah. We have in the Mishnayos that we do for the 11 months in the yard site, we have sholosh tevas hein and whatever sholosh habob midah. When they're large enough, then they're not makabel tumah. Large enough for that purpose is defined as they hold 40 saw of dry measure or 60 saw of or the other way around, 40 saw of liquids or 60 saw of dry. Because the idea is when you put dry things in it, you heap it up. And so there it goes above the rim. Anyway, once it's that large, the Gemara tells us elsewhere, the point is that it's not metalto mole verekon, such a container of such a size, you wouldn't be able to carry it whether full or empty. Because if you try to carry it when it's full, when it's holding its load of 40 or more saw, then it would break. So therefore you don't. You carry it empty and then you refill it, you fill it when you get to your destination. Therefore, that kind of, now, how do we know b'chlal that wooden, let's talk about wooden kalim, although this applies to a certain extent to other materials as well. Where do we know that wooden kalim are makabel tumah? We learn that from the fact that the pasuk mentions wood in the together with a sack. So therefore, we learn from that to be makabel tumah, a kali has to be like a sack. And since a sack is metalto mole verekon, you can carry it empty or full, therefore a kali to be makabel tumah also has to be metalto mole verekon. So these kalim, these wooden kalim that are larger than that amount, are not metalto mole verekon, therefore they're not makabel tumah. So now this person is inside such a box where the box itself is not going to be makabel tumah because of its size, and therefore it'll also block the tumah from coming to him. And he goes into Eretz Amim inside such a box. So now the Braisa says, Rebbe Metame v'Rab Yosi b'Rab Yehuda Matar. So Rebbe holds that he's still Tomei for reasons that we're going to discuss. And Rebbe Yosi b'Rab Yehuda holds that he's Tahor. So my lav, so shouldn't we assume that Rebbe Sava Mishum Avira v'Rab Yosi b'Rab Yehuda Sava Mishum Gusha? So evidently then that would be the Machlokes. Rebbe holds that the problem is the Avir, the very air of Eretz Ha'amim is Tomei. So very well, he went into a box, but it doesn't matter. In other words, he's still in the airspace of Eretz Ha'amim, and the fact that he's inside a box doesn't prevent that. Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda Sav Mishum Gusha. Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda would hold the problem is the dirt of it. Well, then he's not standing on the dirt, and he's not an oihel over the dirt, because then the box itself forms a chatzitza between him and the dirt, so therefore he'd be tahor. So you'd see, therefore, that the answer, whether it would be, if you figure that way, then the question of whether it's mishum aver or mishum gush is actually that machlokes tanoi. So the Gemara answers, loy, not necessarily, dekulei alma mishum gusha. We could actually say that both Rebbe and Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda hold that the problem is the dirt. But then the machlokas is mar sova oihel zoruk shmei oihel. one of them holds that a throne tent is considered a tent. When we say throne over here, what we mean is, for example, in this case, not necessarily being thrown, but in other words, it's being transported. It's a movable tent that's being carried from one place to another. So Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda is saying that such a thing is considered a valid oihel, and therefore it will block the Tumah from getting to him. Umar Sava, lo shmei oihel, whereas Rebbe will hold that such a thing is not considered an oihel, and oihel is only going to be if it's staying in one place. So in that case, the machlokes might not be about Aver versus Gush at all. In other words, Rebbe would be saying that even if the problem is only Gush, you're thinking because the person is inside the box, therefore that blocks the Tumas Oihel of overshadowing the dirt of Eretz Amim from reaching him. No, because it's only an Oihel Zoro, and such a thing doesn't count as an Oihel. So now, the next couple of lines of Gemara, Tosfos has two ways of explaining it. So we'll explain according to one. So we'll learn it according to, and there's a slightly different girsa in the middle as well. So we'll learn according to the first one, and then we'll learn according to the second one. The second one, actually, most of the Rishonim also agree that that's the correct explanation. Now, there's of course implications in halacha between the two of them. So we'll get to it. So we're saying that Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda would hold that an oihel zoruk, that a moving oihel, is still called an oihel. But the Gemara asks, Vahatanya, but don't we learn in a braisa, Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda oimer tevashi malaya kelim, doesn't that if a person takes a box full of kelim, and the zorka pnei a mess, and he throws it over the surface of a mess, so that's a classic example of oihel zoruk, he's literally throwing the oihel, but oihel in an oihel. Now Tosfos takes out the word but oihel because it's not really relevant. We're not talking about that he throws it inside an oihel. We're talking about the box itself. The question is whether it's an oihel to prevent the tumor from getting to the kelim. On the other hand, there are Rishonim who justify the word ba'oihel over here, because one possibility, in fact, is that what we mean is that he's throwing it through an oihel on mess, and the question is what happens to the kalim that are inside the box. So there's something the Mishnah Melech actually explains on Rambam that when we talk about oihel zoruk, that would only be if a person is in an oihel mess, so he's not directly over the mess, and yet of course normally tumas oihel would make him tomei, so then maybe an oihel zoruk would help. So in that case, then that's what we're talking about over here, that you would have the word oihel over here. So he does that. So the braisa continues tmeya. So then the contents of the box are still tomei because it's an oihel zoruk. The im hoisa munachas, but if the box was sitting in one place and not moving, then tahora. Then it would be tahora because now it would be an oihel kavua. So what are you telling me then? So what are you telling me? Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda holds that an oihel zoruk is an oihel, and for that reason, when the person goes into Eretz Amim in a shita tevo migdol, then he's going to remain tahor according to Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda because he's inside an oihel. This last braisa that we just quoted over here is saying that even according to Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, an oihel zoruk is not a valid oihel. And the answer would be Ella. So rather, we'd have to answer to kula alma mishum avira. No, so rather we would have to say that everybody would agree, both Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, and Rebbe, that the problem of Eretz Amim is the Avir, is the actual air. And we're also going to have to assume that they both say that Oihel Zoruk is not an Oihel. But Umar Sova, Kivin Dele Shchichel, Gozer Be Rabbanon, but the difference is Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda would say, it's true that an Oihel Zoruk is not an Oihel, and it's true the problem is Avir, but it's uncommon to go someplace inside a box. So therefore he's going to say like Gozru Bein Abanan. So therefore the Chachamim did not make the Gzera, and therefore since the whole problem of Eretz Amim is only Derabanan, because again Daraisa, unless we have a Chazaka of Tumah in a place, we're not going to assume that it's Tomei. then therefore the Chachamim can be makel in this case and say that because it's an unusual circumstance, therefore we can say that he remains tahor. Umar Sava, whereas Rebbe is going to hold Afagav Zloi Shchicha, even though it's not very common, Goz Rebbe Rabbanu, nevertheless, the Chachamim still make their Gzera and make him Tomei. Vaha Tanya, and indeed we learn in a Braisa, so this the first Vaha Tanya was a question, the second one would be a proof, as the Gemara sometimes does that. So Vaha Tanya, and indeed we learn in a Braisa, Hanichras Eretz Amim B'Shita Tevo Migdol, if a person goes into Eretz Amim in one of these large wooden boxes, Tahar, then he remains Tahar, but Bakorin or a Spina over Iskaria, but if he goes in there, Bakorin in a wagon, or coach really, which is also enclosed. It's also bob midah. It's large enough to contain a person comfortably. So pretty much by definition, it has to be bob midah. But it's a normal way of traveling over sfina, or he's in a boat, which on the face of it should be an oil between him and the riverbed or the seabed or whatever. Over iskaria, or he goes there in an iskaria. And Iskaria, Tosfos explains, is the mast of a ship. Actually, Tosfos says, really, it means more the oars of a ship. But whatever, whether it's the oars or the mast, we don't mean he's actually sitting on top of the oar or on top of the mast. What we really mean is that he's in a large enough boat that has a mast, meaning, in other words, the Mefarish says that more clearly. In other words, that a sfina, the sfina would be a smaller boat, so it's large enough. It's still bob amidah, but it would be like something like a canoe or a kayak or something like that. Whereas an iskaria would be a larger boat that's large enough to have a mast with a sail on it. Or according to the way Tosfos is translating it, it would mean that's large enough to need a lot of oars to row it, as opposed to let's say a small kayak or whatever, which you only need really one oar for it. Anyway, the point is Tomei. In that case, the Braisa says that he is Tomei, and the idea would be, in other words, that Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda is not disagreeing. So therefore, we can say that. So we can say it is exactly that point of whether it's shchicha, whether it's something common. It's very common to travel in a coach or in a. It's very common to travel in a coach or in a boat. Therefore, even Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda is going to agree that he becomes Tomei. And we can say, therefore, that this Braisa goes according to him. It's uncommon to be transported inside a box. Therefore, Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda says, yes, I know oil Zorok is not an oil. And I know the problem is Avu. But in this case, I would say it's so uncommon that the Chachamim are not going to make a Gzeira on it. So you could say that that's the Machloikas. And in that case, again, it has nothing to do with Avu versus Gush. All of that was Tosfos' first steps. Yeah.
By that logic, it wouldn't matter in any case if a Kohen was already in Eretz Amim and he was Tami Mace to have him put him in a box to go to a cemetery. It wouldn't make any change and any difference. So
no,
why do we do that?
The fact is, going to a cemetery is most likely going to be Matame him on a Daraisa level, because like we learned before, you know, you have Kvarim over there that are Matame everything around them. The fact is, even when a Kohen, we learned earlier in the Masechta, for example, that even when a Nazir is already Tomei, he's still not allowed to become more Tomei, and in some cases he even gets Malkus for it. So there's something similar as far as a Kohen. Even a Kohen is Tomei, let's say, and there you can have a much more simpler case. You can have the case where a Kohen is allowed to become Tomei Mess, for example, his relatives have died. We've learned before. Nevertheless, he's not allowed to figure, well, I'm already Tomei anyway, let me touch other dead bodies as well. For that reason, we talked about earlier in the Masechta, for example, that's very common, or I don't know how common it is anymore, but it used to be more common that Kohenim were buried at the edge of the cemetery, so that way their relatives, when they're burying them, are not coming too close to the other Kohenim. So that's even when he's Tomei Mess, Doraisa. You were talking about Eretz Amim is only Dirabonin. For sure, that doesn't give him license to come close to other Kvarim, which there he'd be becoming Tomei Daraisa. What it does give him license to is to go elsewhere in Eretz Amim. We're not going to say that he has to return to Eretz Yisrael as soon as possible, especially because, again, nowadays in Eretz Yisrael, it's not like he's going to be able to become Tahar from Tumas Mes anyhow. We don't have Parah Adrama Ashes. With that said, by the way, it is true when the poskim achronim discuss the whole question that we started talking about yesterday of koyanim on airplanes, some of them do bring this point as sort of a sniff, as maybe another reason to be matir. The fact that we have a lot of sfeikas involved over here, anyhow, about how exactly have they become tame, and is there necessarily a problem with them flying over cemeteries? This is whole business of oyel zoruk over here. So one question is, depending on whether we end up saying that oyel zoruk shmei oyel or not, that's going to be one of the things that factors into that. But it is true that even being an Eretz Amim doesn't give him license to go into cemeteries.
Even his level of tumah doesn't go up. It's as high as possible already being
understood.
An Eretz
nevertheless, Amim. He still has a mitzvah in the Torah not to become tamei mess, and therefore he still has to avoid it as much as possible. Again, just like even when he became tamei for his relatives, where there's no question he's at the maximum degree of tumah, and nevertheless we're still saying he can't become tamei for other mason. So now, all of that was Tosfos' first explanation. Tosfos' second explanation of the flow of the last few lines of the Gemara was as follows. Again, we started with the question of whether Rebbe and Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda are arguing whether Eretz Amim is based on Gush or based on Avir. So first we said that no, they might both agree that it's Gush, but it's a question of Oihol Zaruk. So now, according to Tosfos, a second explanation, the both the Hotanyas are Benichusa, both of them are not a question, but rather a statement, to prove what we said. And so the first Vahatanya would be that you learn in a Braisa that Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda says that if you have a box full of Kalim and you throw it over the mess, then it's tame. So in that explanation, then we would say that the contents of the box are tame because, in other words, Tosfos explains there's a difference between whether the box is thrown where the box is thrown and flying through the air versus here we're talking about that the original case we were talking about a person goes into Eretz Amim in a shida teva or migdol. So we're talking about somebody who's carrying it is touching the ground. So Tosfos refers to, for example, there's a Mishnah in Ahalos that says that for example, if you have a talus flying through the air. So imagine, for example, you had somebody put out their wash on their line to dry, and one of the pieces flew off the line and is now flying through the air. Imagine that now. Punct happens that it's flying over you, and there happens to be a kazayis min ames next to you. Would you become tomei? The Mishnah says that not. Such a thing is not considered an oihel for any purpose in halacha. It's just flying free in the wind. So by the same token, then when you're taking a box full of kalim and throwing it, it's also flying free, and therefore Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda would agree that that's not considered an oihel. What we're talking about over here, when a person goes into Eretz Amim, the Shida Tevo Migdol is talking about where there are people or animals carrying the box, and they are in contact with the ground. So then Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda would hold that that's considered an oihel. So we could answer it that way. Then the Gemara goes on to say. So now in this second explanation of Tosfos, the next word in the Gemara after that is not Ela, like we have it in front of us, but rather V'ibois Ema, but rather, if you want, I can give a different answer. So in other words, according to this second explanation of Tosfos, and again, most of the Rishonim agree with it, is that the Gemara has given one answer. So either way, we're saying they're not arguing about Aver or Gush. We're saying both of them agree that the problem is Gush, but the question is about oihol zoruk. Is Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda says that there's certain kinds of oihol zoruk that are considered an oihol, namely where they're being carried on the ground, versus a different kind, such as flying through the air, where he's going to agree that that's not considered an oihol zoruk, like a box flying through the air or like a talus flying through the air. Then the Gemara goes on with another potential, with another possible answer, which is that they both agree. The problem is Avir, and the question is whether it's, and we would say that because it's less common to go in a Shita Tevel Migdol, therefore, Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda would hold there's no Gzera, and Vahal Tanya, and indeed we learn a Braisa that bears that out. So even he would agree that if a person is inside a coach or whatever, then he's tame, because it would be, the problem would indeed be because of Avir. So those are the two different ways that Tosfos has of explaining the flow of the Gemara of the last few lines. Then the Gemara continues. The Iboyesema, or I can give another answer. So according to Tosfos' first explanation, this is the second answer that we're sticking with, because again, the first answer we schlugged up. According to Tosfos' second explanation, this is now the third answer that we're sticking with, because we had so far two answers that are equally good. So now we have another one. Hacha Shema Yotzi Rosh Yerubba L'Sham Pligi. The machloikus would be, is the person going, might, are we concerned that the person might stick out his head and most of his body over the Eretz Amin? So in other words, if a person is going inside a box, that's not very likely. On the other hand, if he goes in a coach or a ship or whatever, then he's much more likely to, because of course you can stick your head and your body out of the windows over there. Whereas Rebbe is still concerned that even inside a box he might do that. And in fact, the Shittim Kubetzis brings that. In fact, for that reason, Rebbe Yosi Rebbe Yehuda is going to, and maybe even Rebbe would say that in the case of Kalim, it's Tahir, because Kalim aren't going to stick their heads and their bodies out. So you could say that would be the machlokas. Pligi is the machlokas for Hotanya, and indeed we learn in a brayse of Yosef of Yehuda Omer Hanichas Eretz Amim B'Shita Tevel Migdol Tahir. Person goes into Eretz Amim in one of these kinds of boxes, he's Tahir. Ad Shiyotzi L'Sham Roshe Erubay, unless he puts his head, or really it's supposed to be and most of his body over there. When he goes in a coach or a ship or whatever, then it's normal enough for him to stick his head and most of his body out. So therefore, the Chachamim are going to be goyzer and say that he's tamei, just in case he did. But in the case of a box where it's unlikely for him to do that, then Rabbi Yosef Yehuda says there's no reason to be goyzer, and Rebbe is saying even in that case we're still going to be goyzer. So now comes the relevance of all of this as far as Kohanim flying in airplanes, where you have a number of considerations. The airplane itself is certainly Baba Midah. It's far larger than 40 Sa'ah. It's sealed by definition. You certainly can't stick out your head and most of your body. On the other hand, it is flying through the air, and especially according to Tosfos' second explanation, even Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda is going to hold that something that's flying through the air and not in any way in contact with the ground is not chotzitz b'fnei tumah. So because of all those considerations, as well as others as well, there are other considerations that factor into this as well. Rav Moshe writes in one of his Truvas that maybe we could say that now metal kalim are not subject to this rule of Baba Midah. They're transmitting Tumah regardless. But Rav Moshe writes in one of his Truvas, potentially, maybe we would say, the Torah mentions only six metals that are Mekabel Tumah: gold, silver, copper, iron, tin, and lead. Maybe you could say planes nowadays are generally not made out of any of those materials. Mostly they're made out of aluminum. So maybe Rav Moshe writes in one of his Truvas, maybe aluminum is not in that category, and therefore it wouldn't be Mekabel Tumah. But then in a later Truva, he says maybe not necessarily. And the fact is, even more contemporary posts can point out that there are plenty of components of airplanes nowadays that are made out of steel and therefore would be Mekabel Tumah even according to that. So the Maskana, many poskim do agree that there is a problem that there is a problem with Kohanim flying in planes over cemeteries, and therefore over the years they've tried out different things. For a while back, for a while there was this thing, people had these big bags that they would put themselves inside, figuring that that will help because of the Gene of Summit Apostle. Not everybody agrees that that's valid either. Over time, different times, for example, different airlines, El Al in particular, has actually in response to requests about these kinds of things, they've actually sometimes changed their flight paths to not go over known Jewish cemeteries in Eretz Yisrael. Again, in Chutz La'aretz, there's much less of an issue, for one thing, because you anyway have the question of whether Goyish Kvarim or even Matame Ba'oihel, if you go like Reb Shimon, they're not. And the majority of cemeteries in Chutz La'aretz, of course, are goyim, and therefore there's much less of an issue. But but when it comes to Kohanim flying over Jewish graves, in fact, and again, you do have the fact also that most of the vast majority of the Rishonim, Paskin like Rebbe, who's more machmir in our sugya, and as we're saying, in our sugya over here, holds oihel zaruk, that a moving oihel is lo shmei oihel, is not considered an oihel, and therefore that creates potential issues. Okay, but in any case, the point of the sugya is that we don't have to say necessarily that Rebbe and Rabbi Yosef Rebbe Yehuda are arguing about the issue of Gusha or Avira. You could give different possible answers, that some of which depend on them saying that they both agree that the problem is Gush, and others of them, and other answers being that they both agree the problem is Avir. Lamaskona, we do hold the halacha that the problem is Avir. The problem is not only Gush, the problem is actually Avir. So it's not even a matter necessarily of having to be sprinkled with paradrum or water, but it is a matter of the person becomes tamei as a result of going to Eretz Amim again, because the Chachamim wanted to discourage people from leaving Eretz Yisrael.
What about being in a ship and passing over dead human bodies?
Well, that's what we said in our Gemara just now. We mentioned the Sfina, a person is in a ship. Or be a scallion. We said a large ship that has a mast. Yeah. So in fact, we said that he is Tomei. And we said a couple of possibilities. One is because since that's a common thing, Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda agrees that we're going to make Zera on it. And the other possibility is because you might stick out your head and most of your body over the surface, and then you're going to become Tomei, because obviously then the ship is not going to be a chatzitza.
So. My question is, then a Kohen shouldn't go on a ship?
A ship is not necessarily going over places where there are known bodies. Again, the whole question is, as far as Kohenim and planes or whatever, is where there are known to be bodies. It's a little bit different where it's only Eretz Amim, where there's the possibility that there might be bodies buried over there. Then we have less reason to be concerned.
There are known bodies. I mean, it's just a fact that the sea and even lakes have dead bodies.
So if you have a particular lake or a particular sea that you know that there are bodies deposited in there, then you might have an issue. But you take, for example, you're going in the Hudson River, or you're going in New York Bay or whatever, not necessarily other bodies over there. And even if there were bodies at one point, they're probably long gone.
Well, for instance, in Uman, where they have pilgrimages every year, it is very well known that the lake is the site of a mass murder, and there are many, many dead bodies there.
Kohanim are traveling in boats on that lake? They go to Uman. They're not necessarily traveling over that lake. I don't know. I've never been to the place. I have no idea what Kohanim do over there, but I don't know. I don't know any reason to think that they're traveling over that lake. And even if they are, again, that massacre was 250 years ago. The bodies are long since gone, probably. I don't know.
Yeah, but they go to the lake to do for Tashlich.
That's not the same thing at all. That's you're standing next to the lake. You're not traveling over the lake. That's different. All right, let's go on.
So if your face is over the lake.
Who says their face has to be over the lake? If their face was over the lake, it might be a problem. But first of all, their face is not necessarily over it. They're standing next to it. And even if it is, come on, the bodies aren't by the edge of the water over there. They'd be deeper down in the water. All right, let's go on. And if you want, we can chat about this later. Okay, we said in the Mishnah umaschil umoyne. We said that now. So we discussed. We have the example in on Mishnah of a person who became a mitzora during the time that he was a nazir, and we said that the among the various stages of his tzaras, some of them will count towards his days of nazirus, and some will not. What we said was that we said you have the days of the days of his quarantine, the days of Esgera, when he's locked up waiting for the Kohen's verdict. Those, we said, do count towards his Nazirus, according to Tosfos, only if in the end he ends up being Tahor. On the other hand, we said the days when he's actually excluded from the city, which are called Yemei Gomrei, and afterwards, the 7 days that he counts after his after the beginning of his Tara, before the next stage of his Tara, those days don't count towards his Nazirus, but they don't make him forfeit what he counted so far. So we said, Umas Pilamoni, he starts counting. So now, Omer of Chista, said of Chista explains, Lois Shonu, our Mishnah is only talking about that those days don't count towards Nazirus, Ela b'Nazirus Mu'etis, only when it's a short Nazirus. So say, for example, a typical Nazirus of 30 days. So now the problem is, in other words, what's going to happen? Now, as a Metzoda, as we discussed, he's going to have to shave. He actually shaves twice a week apart normally. So fine, we talked about yesterday the idea because even though a Nazir is not allowed to shave, but here where he became a Metzora, then that overrides that. We're going to talk about that in more detail later on in the parak. There's the fact of Eser Doichaloisese, there's the fact that, like the Rambam says, that his Nazirus is kind of in a state of suspension right now while he's Metzora. Whatever the case, then the fact is that he does shave. Now, the problem is, though, once he does all that shaving of the Metzora, then, of course, he doesn't have 30 days growth of hair. And we've learned many times in the Masechta that you need 30 days growth of hair to finish your Nazirus. So, therefore, Rav Chista says, when you have a Nazirus Mu'etes, when you have a short Nazirus of 30 days or thereabouts, then or a little bit more than that, then yes, the time of his chaluta and the time of his sfira are not going to count towards his Nazirus, because practically speaking, at the end, he's not going to have 30 days left of his Nazirus to be able to cut his hair. Avu b'Nazirus meruba, but Rav Chista says if it was a long Nazirus, so say he had taken on a couple of months or a year or whatever, then Rav Chista says mislak nami sokin lay, then the days of his tzaras will in fact count towards it, because there's no problem. At the end, he'll still have at least 30 days left to be able to regrow his hair. However, the Gemara says Masiv Rav Shrevya. Rav Shrevya says I have a contradiction to that. From our Mishnah, we said maschil umoyne miyad. We said he starts recounting right away, because we said unlike a nazir who became tomei with one of the tumas that we had earlier in the perek, he doesn't have to start his nazirus over again. We said that he does begin right after he becomes tahor. He recontinues his nazirus. The ein mevato behenas hakoydmin, and he doesn't forfeit the previous days. So now, Rav Shrevya says, "B'mai." So now you have to figure out what is the scenario the Mishnah is talking about. Ilema b'nezirus mu'etes. Are you talking about it's only a short nezirus of 30 days? What do you mean? How could the Tana say that he doesn't lose any days? Haboy gidol seir. The fact that kaboy gidol seir. The fact is, he does require enough time to regrow his hair. So what are you telling me? He's not losing anything. Bal Kochai, whether you like it or not, he's going to have to lose days, because again, he's going to have to lose a number of days equivalent to whatever it takes to get back up to 30 days. So say, for example, he was a nazir for just 30 days. He got saras 10 days in. What are you going to say? The whole thing. So you're going to say, let's say he's outside the machna for a week. And let's say, for example, then he's healed of the tzaras, and then they start the process of his tara, and he has another week. So you're going to say now he's up to 24 days. Very nice. The fact is, you're fine. He only has 6 days left of his nazirus, but the fact is he's going to need 30 days to regrow his hair. So of necessity, he's going to need another 24 days anyhow. To be able to regrow, so that the fact is he is losing lots of time. So obviously the Mishnah can't be talking about that case. Ela lav b'nezirus meruba. Evidently, then we have to assume that the Mishnah is talking about a longer nezirus. Vikatani maschil amoyne miyad. And yet the Mishnah says that he starts counting right away. In other words, that only after you may suffer, right? Only after those 7 days of counting. So we're saying that even by Nazirus Merubah, the days of his Nazirus don't count towards it. So that would be the Chiddush of the Mishnah. So not like Reb Chisda, who says that if, let's say, the guy was a Nazir for 100 days, and in this scenario over here that we just described, he ends up being healed of his Saras 24 days in. Where there you're going to say he still has 76 days left to go, which is more than enough, and therefore he wouldn't lose anything. The Mishnah is not implying that. The Mishnah is implying, when it says Maskel Amona Miyad, that he has to start counting right away, implying counting from where he left off. So fine, he's not forfeiting the original 10 days, but he is forfeiting the entire 2 weeks that he would, let's say in our scenario, the entire 2 weeks that he went through, the Tsaras process, because those don't count at all. So the Gemara answers, who most evolved, who mafarik law? Rav Shrevya, who asked the question, he also answered that you don't have to say the Mishnah is contradicting Rav Chisda, because b'nezirus bas chamishim yod. You could be talking about that the Nazirus was originally taken on for 50 days. We don't have to mean 50, we mean something around that, where in other words, there can be enough time for growth of hair. Or where there might just be barely enough time for growth of hair. So in other words, the case would be, to Yosef Esrin, so suppose, for example, he went through 20 days of his Nazirus so far, then he developed Saras, so now, so again, there's going to come the point when he shaves after the Saras process, at that point, once he's finished with Saras, he's still going to have to sit for another 30 days. So now we would say that's the scenario. He's not losing any days. All it is the time in between that he had Saras is not counting towards his 50 days, but it's not making him lose any time either. Because after all, you have 30 days left for him to have Gidol Seir. So therefore, you could say the Mishnah is telling us both. On the one hand, it's telling us that he's not. That he's not forfeiting. And on the one hand, the Mishnah is telling us that he can start recounting as soon as he finishes with the Tsaras, and that's good enough because there are 30 days left and he's not losing anything because he has 30 days. On the other hand, the days of the Tsaras don't count. So the Mishnah doesn't contradict Rav Chisda. You could say that if, for example, he made a Nazirus of several months, let's say, and then you would say actually that as long as you have more than 30 days, then in fact all the time that he so Tosfos gives an example. Let's say he took on Nazirus for 53 days. So he went through 20 days, then he had 14 days of then he had 14 days of Tsaras. So now what'll happen is that. So some of the days of the Tsaras will count towards his Nazirus, because again, you need 30 days of growth of hair at the end. If all of the days counted, then so far he'd be up to day 34 of his Nazirus. He has 19 days to go, but 19 days is enough. So fine, 11 days of his Tsaras won't count, but three of them will, because the whole Tsaras process took him in this example, 2 weeks. And if the Nazirus was longer than that, if let's say he had taken on Nazirus for 70 days, then he wouldn't lose, or 65 days, he wouldn't lose anything at all, because by the time he gets to day 34 of his Nazirus, and he's bringing his Korbanus for Tsaras, fine, he still has over a month left of his Nazirus, and therefore he doesn't have to lose anything at all. And therefore, the whole time that he was in Metzorah, we can be saying, like Rav Chisda is saying, it still counts towards his Nazirus. He only has to wait now another 30 or 31 or whatever it is days. Okay, so that answers that question. But now the Gemara is going to bring another question on Rav Chisda, and this question, the discussion of this question is going to take us into the middle of the next omelet. We're going to introduce a case that we're going to talk about. The Mishnah is going to discuss this case later in the Masechta. Now, you have like this. Imagine now we've talked before about so again, we had a nazir becomes a mitzvah. We said that the issur of him shaving is suspended, and when it comes time for him to shave for his tzaras, then he's going to do that. Never mind the fact that he's a nazir, because the fact that he has to shave for his tzaras overrides that. Now we also know, as we know from earlier in the Masechta, that if a nazir becomes tamei, same thing, we make an exception and we tell him to shave at the end after he becomes tahor from his tumas mes, and then he shaves and then brings his korbanos and restarts his nazirus. Now, later on in the perek, we're going to talk about what happens if a person has a suffix on these things. So, Masiv Rami Bachoma. So, Rami Bachoma says, I have a contradiction on Rav Chisda. The Mishnah says later on in our perek, Nazir Shahaya Tomei Besafik Umuchlat Besafik. Suppose that a Nazir was Tomei with a Safik, and he was also Muchlat, he was also confirmed as a Mitzora with a Safik. So, the Safik whether he became Tomei Mes, there's also a Safik whether he's considered a Mitzora. Now, how do you have a doubt about Tumas Mes is easy enough to find. We're going to have at the beginning of the next perek examples of that. How do you have examples of him being a Metzora Misafik? Usually, you have the rule that says that Safik Negoyim Tahor. So there are a number of explanations that Rishonim and Achronim offer. One of them is based on a Yerushalmi. First of all, the Yerushalmi over here explains that you can be talking about that a Kohen has seen two different Mitzarayim, and one of them he declared Mukhlat and the other one not, and now he forgot which one is which. So now we would say that both of them are Tomei Misafik. On the other hand, the Chazon Ish has a problem with that, doesn't seem to work. Tosfos gives an example that you're talking about that it's a suffix whether what's covering part of his body is actual tzaras or only a boihak or only something which would be like freckles or eczema or whatever. So Tosfos gives that as an example of a suffix of tzaras. And then different achronim ask on that. Karen Ur, the Chazon Ish ask on that. It doesn't seem to work. Then you have other possibilities. You can have, for example, you have the case the Rambam describes in Hilchos Tzaras. You have the famous case where you're not sure which came first, the spot of Tzaras or the white hair. You have famously the Gemara in Bava Metzia tells us that they were arguing about that in Mesivta Dirakia in the Yeshiva Shomaila, and they called in Rabba, and Rabba passed away. And as he was giving the answer to that, he passed away. Anyway, the question is, we know the Torah tells us that if a person has a spot of Tzaras on his skin, and then because of that, the hair turns white, then he's Tomei Muchlat. On the other hand, if the hair was white from beforehand and then Tzaras develops around it, it's not going to be Tomei. What happens if there's a Safik? So then the Rambam Paskins, that is Safik Tomei. So there you'd have an example of Safik. There you'd have an example of Safik Negoyim. Another example, the Minchas Chinuch gives another example. What happens if the Kohen who declared him Tomei was a Tumtum or an Androgynous or whatever? So it's a Suffolk, whether he's a man or a woman, or if he's a man, he's able to give a verdict on the Goyim. If he's a woman, then not. Anyway, whatever the case, you have a case of Suffolk Mitzvah, and you also have a case of Suffolk Tomeiness. Now, of course, the problem is that because of a Suffolk, you can't necessarily tell him to shave because of his tumor or because of his tzaras. What if he's not Tomei? What if he's not a mitzvah? So the Mishnah describes, so Sarshaya Tomei b'Suffolk or Muchlat b'Suffolk. So he had a Suffolk of tuma as well, of tumas mes, as well as a Suffolk of tzaras. So the Mishnah says, so what he has to do is like this. He waits. So now let's say, for example, his Nazirus was 30 days. At the end of 30 days, no matter what, he's going to be able to shave, because even if he was a Nazir Tahor, even if he wasn't Tomei and not a Mitzvah, at the end of 30 days, his Nazirus is over and he can shave and bring his Korbanos. So at the end of 30 days, the Mishnah says, so what happens is, at the end of 30 days, then he shaves, and that shaving might be one of a few possibilities. It might be that he's shaving because his Nazirus is over. It might be that he's shaving because this is the first shaving of the Metzora, or it might be he's shaving because he's a Nazir Tameh and is starting his Nazirus over. So one way or the other, at the end of 30 days, he can shave to cover that. What he does as far as Korbanos, Tosfos discusses in some detail over here, what he has to do as far as his Korbanos. That's not quite so simple, of course, because some of his Korbanos he can bring because of a Suffolk, but some of them he cannot. But fine, he can still, we learned earlier in the Masechta, that you can bidyeved, even though the Nazir is supposed to bring three korbanos, bidyeved, he can shave in connection with only one of them. So therefore, he can do that. He can bring one of the korbanos and be able to shave. Then what happens is he has to wait another 30 days. Then he does another shaving. Now, again, there are possibilities. It might be that this is the second shaving of the Metzora. It might be that before he was a Nazir Tameh and now he's shaving as a Nazir Tahor. Or it might be that this shaving is completely unnecessary. And then he brings more korbanos, because again, if he's a Metzora, he has to bring korbanos for his tzaras. So therefore, the Mishnah ends up saying that once 60 days have passed, then he's able to eat kodshim, because once he did his first two shavings, then no matter what, even if he was a Metzora, then he's already covered his two shavings and he's brought his korbanos, and therefore now he's completely tahor from the tumah of a Metzora, if he ever was a Metzora in the first place. So one way or the other, by the time 60 days have passed, by the time Tosfos explains, it comes the 61st day, then for sure he's not a mechusar kapara anymore, therefore he's able to eat kodshim. He hasn't necessarily brought his korbanos of a Nazir Tameh. Tosfos points out, as we've learned earlier in the Masechta, a Nazir Tameh is not really considered a mechusar kapara in that sense, because the korbanos he has to bring are not so much in order to get him out of his state of tumah, but for him to be able to restore his nazirus. Anyway, continues the Mishnah, v'shoyse yayin v'tam l'meisim l'acham meyav v'esrim yayin. As far as drinking wine and becoming tamei lames, as far as his nazirus actually being over, for that he has to wait 120 days. Because what happens is, so the Mishnah goes on with what he has to do. So again, at the end of 30 days, he needed one shaving, which might be any of three possibilities. At the end of another 30 days, he needed another shaving, which again, might be any of several different possibilities. Might be the second shaving of the Metzora, might be the shaving of his nazirus tahara, or it might be nothing at all. Then he has to wait another 30 days, and then he he has to wait another 30 days, and so now he's up to 90 days. So now he shaves yet again, and it might be because now he's a Nazir Tahor, it might be during the first 30 days he was a Metzora, and therefore again during the first 60 days those didn't count towards Nazirus at all. So now at the end of 90 days he needs to shave, because now he may have only been a Metzora and not Tamei Mes, and now he just finished his Nazirus Tahara. So he shaves again and brings Korbanos, and again Tosfos discusses in some detail exactly what Korbanos he brings. Then he waits yet another 30 days. Now you have the fourth possibility. What if he was both a Metzora and a Tamei Mes? So what if the shaving and Korbanos that he brought on the 90th day were actually for Nazirus? What if he was a Metzora? So he couldn't even start his Nazirus. He couldn't even start his first Nazirus until after the 60 days are over. So now he does his Nazirus Tuma, and then he does his Nazirus Tara. By the way, later on, it points out, the Mishnah and the Gemara point out later, that you can't have one shaving do double duty. You can't say, well, look, I was a Metzora and a Tamei Mes, so now I'll shave and it'll cover my Tzaras and it'll cover my Tumas Mes. It doesn't work. You need a separate shaving for each one. So therefore, again, he needs to shave at the end of 90 days and again at the end of 120 days. Once you reach 120 days, all the possibilities have been covered. Even if he was a Metzora and his two shavings were on day 30 and 60, and he was a Nazir Tameh and his shaving for that was on day 90, then good, day 120 is, or 121, whatever, is the day of his shaving for his Nazirus Tahara. So therefore, once you reach 120 days, then he's allowed to drink wine and become Tamei Mes, because no matter what, he's for sure finished his Nazirus by that point. Thus far, the Mishnah. The Tani Allah, now, Rami Bachama continues, we have a Braisa in reference to that Mishnah. When would all that apply that you have after 60 days, you can eat Kodshim, and after 120 days, he's completely free of Nazirus, would only be if it was Nazirus Mu'etis, only if it was the minimum Nazirus of 30 days. Avo Nazirus Bas Shana, but suppose he took on the original Nazirus a year, then he's going to have to wait to eat kodshim for 2 years after the suffix began. Because again, you're going to have, he can't shave throughout the whole first year because he might be a nazir tahor. So he has to wait until the end of the first year to even shave on the possibility that he was a mitzora. Then he has to wait another year to shave for the same reason, because he may not have been a nazir, he may not have been a mitzora, he may have only been a nazir tamei, and so on and so forth. And when is he going to be able to drink wine and become tamei mes? Only after 4 years, because each of the haircuts is going to end, and the korbanos are going to have to be a year apart for the same reason. The Rambam describes in Hilchos Nazirus, you can even have a case. What if the Nazirus originally they took on was for 10 years? Same idea. Then he'll only be able to eat Kodshim after 20 years. He'll only be able to be Shosi Yayin Matam Al Mason after 40 years. Same idea. Now, continue. So Romi Bachoma asked the question. So now, again, Rav Chista had said that when we're talking Nazirus Meruba, when after the Tzaras, there's left at least 30 days, enough enough for him to be able to regrow his hair. Then Rav Chista said the entire period when he was a mitzora counts towards his nazirus, because at the end of it there'll still be 30 days for him to grow his hair. Now Rami Bachama says the isak udaydach sarkin layomi. Now if you're going to tell me that the days of his saras count towards his nazirus, then why does he need, in the last case, the Braisa, where you're telling me his Nazirus was a year, and therefore you're telling me he needs four years, why does he need four years? Tiskile b'shalosh shanim v'shloshim yayim. All he should need is 3 years and 30 days, and at the end of that, he's mutter to drink wine, etc. Because you would have 2 years, because of the suffix tzaras. So fine, he can't shave in the middle of the first year or in the middle of the second year, because he might still be a Nazir. But now, after 2 years have passed, now he should only need to keep 30 days. If he's a Nazir Tahar, then it doesn't matter. The days of its Saras still counted towards the Nazirus. So the second year will have counted towards the Nazirus. So now he only needs to wait 30 days to regrow his hair. And fine, if you're going to say, if he was a Nazir Tame, so he hasn't yet done Nazirus Tara, so fine, you have a suffix of that as well. So therefore, he needs a year of that. But in any case, all he needs then total is 3 years and 30 days, because at some point, all you need is 30 days to regrow his hair. So you're going to have 1 year and then he does his first shaving, a second year, then he does a second shaving, a third year only begins, and he just waits 30 days, enough to regrow his hair and shave, and then he needs another year in case it was another tum. So the fact that the Mishnah doesn't say that, the fact that the Mishnah says he needs four years, shows not like Rav Chista. No matter what, the time when he was a Mitzora is not going to count towards his Nazirus, whether it was Nazirus Mu'etes or whether it was Nazirus Meruba. So that's Rami Bachoma's question. So we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. Rav Ashi is going to bring another question on Rav Chista, which is a much more elaborate one. We're going to quote a long braisa that then Rav Ashi is going to prove from it, not like Rav Chista. And that will take up most of the next daf, and we'll do that tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem.